real warm welcome to the Enduro World Series podcast. My name is Rick McLaughlin, and joining me to talk about everything from the big wide world of stage racing is our very own Rory Cunningham. Rory, I know we parted last week on the promise of recording this mano-a-mano with one of your three-quarter sized Guinness glasses each, but that hasn't happened, I'm upset to say. We did manage to get to see each other last week. I was down your way in the Tweed Valley getting a couple of bits and pieces of work done, alongside getting my bike serviced, so at least we got a bit of a catch up. How have you been since then? Your bike, incidentally, your old bike was in at the same time as mine was in the workshop, and it didn't look quite that fresh.
Yeah, it was good to see you, Rick, albeit pretty short and with no Guinness, but yeah, the bike's had a short but tough innings, you would say, you know, not to mention dealing with an additional 10 kilograms for the last 6 months. So
it's had a tough time. Yeah. It's had a tough time, and your increasing commitment to the Iron Temple hasn't been easier on it.
It's pretty disappointing, really. I always considered myself to be a pretty smooth rider, but given the look of the people, given the look of the faces as I wheeled into Tweed Valley bikes, I might have to reconsider that.
I don't think there's anything that a complete rebuild wouldn't fix. But I'm actually sort of I shot myself in the foot that day as well, and I wheeled my Megatar in and said that confidently that there was nothing wrong with it, and that I'm pretty good at keeping on top of it and looking after it. And then the very next ride out, I went round a corner and a massive rock went into the rotor, and it's taken out the rotor and two spokes as well. So
nightmare.
Anything else you've been up to since then? Or it feels weird. I've only seen you recently, so it's not normally we haven't seen each other for a month or so.
Yeah, actually, I think I mentioned on here a few weeks ago I'd plan on joining the £1,000 club, and I did it yesterday. So
you now weigh over £1,000.
I wish. Unfortunately, it's unfortunately it's not to do with money either. It's to do with Americans not adopting the metric system. So 454 kilos for those not stuck in 1800s, and you've got three lifts. So you've got a deadlift, a squat, and a bench to try and get to that number. So I got to 460. So I was fairly delighted with myself, and lost 2 kilos in the process. So happy days.
Can you tear a phone book in half yet? That is my born in the 80s like high watermark of strongman like ability. If you can tear a phone book,
there's no such thing as a phone book anymore. So I'll have to.
But as I was saying, that the wee Yellow Pages one's pretty dinky, isn't it? Right, we should make that a target then for the last podcast of the year at EWS Tweed Valley. You should be tearing a phone book in half. I think that's achievable.
Sounds good to me.
Right, then we've got I should also point out I've had two Mark Scott sightings.
Pretty incredible that you spotted him, to be honest. There's
he's looking very trim. He's got a couple of sort of long distance adventures planned this year. Does Santa Cruz as Mark Scott, but I was walking down to your house the other day, and lovely sunny day in Innerleven, and he bombed towards me on a road bike, and it took me a while to clock that it was him, because he too has been growing his hair, the sort of Scottish football legend Colin Hendry, sort of in his prime sort of standards. And he was bombing towards me on a road bike, and he pulled what I can only be described as an obscene hand gesture at me whilst grinning. So I responded in the time-honoured fashion, and as he went by, I realised that I was sort of amidst a queue of about 20 people and children queuing for the ice cream shop.
Great stuff.
And that, I just probably offended a lot of people. The second one was, he also let me know that he's Mark's a vegan, as I'm sure regular EWS fans might sort of be aware. And he's always come up with ingenious, we talked about snacks, and sort of, you know, what have you got in your back pocket? Nutrition things a few weeks ago, and he's come up with a belter, and that is medjool dates pre-loaded with peanut butter.
That's old news. That I've done that for years.
What?
Yeah, that's just,
I've literally never seen you do that.
Well, pretty sure my old flatmate Big Dill used to do that, and
he assured me it was a revolutionary new thing he'd come up with.
Nah, definitely wasn't. But I bet his power of weight's all right. But
his power of weight, he clipped past me at a serious speed. Anyway, Right, let's get on, because this has been one of those weeks where I thought that we don't really have a whole load on the news agenda to talk about, and it's quietly crept up over the last few days, so we've got a bit to get on with. There's a few big ones this week, but a big one this week is obviously the confirmation of that Yeti 1UP components squad. So this is Yeti's, I guess you'd call them kind of like a satellite team. It's not quite the full factory development squad. They've showed their hand. It's definitely an intriguing one. Jared Gray is returning to the fray, and he's being paired with young Casper Woolley. Now, Woolley, he's made a name for himself already with some big performances last season. That is during some home racing in Canada. He did a bit of giant killing last summer at the Crankworx series, and people are tipping him to be one of the next big talents. He's a Squamish native, so someone that you do see cropping up on the likes of Jesse Melamed, Remy Govan, Miranda Miller's social media feeds. What's interesting is that the team are being pretty vocal that this is a mentorship style gig, in that they want them to learn from Jared, and there aren't many more qualified people to learn from, are there?
Yeah, there's really not. I mean, when I was a kid, I remember watching Jared, Kenny, when he was, I guess, at the beginning of his downhill and four-cross career, in the Synopsis and Hypnosis films that Clay Porter did, and I think that was about 2004, 2005, and you know, you think of the 15 years since then and the sports that he's transcended, not to mention what he's achieved in each one. He's a fairly unique individual, and you know, the knowledge and experience that he's gained along the way and he could, you know, pass on to younger riders is, it's almost unrivaled.
Well, you look at, I mean, before we talk about the young riders that he's been involved with, let's look at the stuff he's won. He's an EWS champ. He's won 5 EWS races, which is the joint third most successful pro men alongside Jerome Clements. His first win was back in Whistler 2013. His most recent was in Aspen Snowmass 2016. He's an Olympian in BMX, where he finished 6th after finishing 2nd overall at the UCI BMX World Cup that year. He completely retrained himself for that Beijing Olympics, completely refocused on BMX and just went and did that. Double UCI world champion in 4-cross, 2nd a couple of weeks ago at the Australian Cross Country National Champs.
World's medal in 2013 on a trail bike.
World's medal, on a trail bike. He's in downhill. Yeah. He's just an absolute... the last time I think we talked about Jared was one of our Ask Us Anythings, which we have actually had a load of questions come in for the Ask Us Anything, so maybe we should bring that back as a standalone episode, but look, we're getting distracted. someone asked us who the greatest of all time, the most complete mountain bike racer is. I think we ended up saying Anne Caroline Chausson, but Graves is definitely in that conversation, isn't he? I mean, you're talking about someone who was riding a BMX at the Olympics 12 years ago and who, a couple of weekends ago, was brushing shoulders with one of the few guys to win an XCO World Cup, whenever it was basically Schurter versus Absalom, you know, Dan McConnell. He's just an absolute machine, isn't he?
Yeah, and I think it's difficult, you know, when you think about the success that some riders have in one discipline, or, you know, if we look at like Sam Hill, obviously hugely successful in downhill and then now in enduro, and you think that Graves has been successful in both of them, not to mention BMX, not to mention 4-cross, not to mention, you know, cross country in recent years. Like, the guy's just, I mean, it's difficult to, the physical fitness you need and to be up there in kind of cross country is, I mean, it's
next level.
Yeah,
it?
It's like, it's something that, like, I know, like, I've got some friends around here who are really, really fit, like the likes of Mark and Gaz Neal, and, you know, if they went out with like 17, 18 year old cross country racers, they would, you know what I mean, they'd be struggling to keep up, or more often than not, they get hosed, and that's kids. So you think about the level up from that of like your, you know, your Schurters and your Absalons, and I mean, and Dan McConnell, even to be on that level, it's just nuts. But, you know, also still kind of being able to race like gnarly technical enduro stages, and it's pretty incredible. And then obviously BMX is completely its own, it's completely like a different skill set, it's a different bike, it's different wheel sizes, it's, you know, you're not, it's not a time trial, you're racing bar to bar with other riders. It's trying to encompass all that, and just imagine how broad you have to kind of spread yourself with training to be good at all of them. It's just nuts. And I think
the mental drive, like the will to want to love racing so much, to be at the sharp end of so many disciplines over so long a period of time, is just it's just mind-boggling. And the last young rider he mentored was a certain Richie Rude, and he helped transform Richie from a junior downhill world title winner into the first pro men back-to-back title winner in the EWS 2015-2016. Those two very close. Jared was formative in transforming Richie. If you're a young rider and you're in a team with a legend like that, we talked about it before with some of the French sides, some of the French squads this season having young riders in there. Is there one sort of thing that you should be trying to learn, or is it just open your eyes and just everything?
Yeah, and anything and everything. Young riders are in that position where they're surrounded by, you know, experienced, successful athletes. They just need to be like a sponge, and just absorb everything. I think some of it can be a little bit more formal. Certainly when it comes to kind of training, they can share plans or sessions that are, you know, a little bit more written down and a little bit more structured. Same with kind of bike setups, you know, describing, you know, oh, I use this and I use that and that pressure and this, and I'll change it for these conditions, etc. But a lot of it's just riding with someone that's better than you and faster. And I've always been quite a strong advocate of riding with people who push you and who necessarily you can't keep up with all the time, because if you've got that kind of, if you've got that carrot to chase, you're always pushing to be faster and pushing to be better, and then at some point you are gonna, if you keep at it, you are gonna keep up. That's not necessarily just a speed thing, that can be physical as well. Like when I started training with kind of fitter, more kind of developed riders, you know, initially we'd go up a climb and I'd just throw the anchor out halfway and that'd be me. And then, you know, 6 months later, it's like you're nipping at somebody's heels, trying to beat them over the top. I mean, I think a lot of that comes down to a person's demeanor. As in, I was always quite competitive and always, you know, well, if they can do it, so can I kind of attitude. But I think most successful racers probably are. So, as far as, you know, what Jared can pass on to young Casper, it'll be, you know, anything and everything. And yeah, I mean, Casper seems like a very good and kind of talented young rider in his own right. So having that experience and just a bit of structure that Jared will bring will be only a real kind of benefit to him. And yeah, we'll look out for him this year.
Graves as well, back on Yeti. It never really seemed to properly click for him at Specialized, did it? But I was surprised whenever I was actually putting the script together that he was on there for 5 years, which is longer than I thought he was.
Yeah, it didn't really ever seem to click, did it? Obviously, he had his health issues, which were pretty life-changing, and we don't know, I guess they don't know how long that was potentially having an effect on him. You know, these things can be pretty complicated, but I kind of agree, he never looked 100% confident on the Specialized like he did on the Yeti. It often seemed like he was really hot and cold, as in when the race suited him, when it was kind of dry and it was quite a physical race, he was there. And as soon as it kind of began to get wet and technical and real you know, the elements were kind of against you. He struggled, but I think
that could be for any number of reasons. Can't yeah. That can be a personal thing as much as not having confidence in whatever is your bike, however your bike is riding, or just the kind of terrain you're on. But it just never seemed to. I mean, he won a stage back in Wicklow in 2017. You're talking about wet days, that's where you'll find one. But I think that was his last stage win, which I think if you're talking about the majority of athletes, a four-year hiatus from the top of the timesheets, plus that no doubt life-changing experience off the bike, battling cancer, we should probably, if anybody's new to the sport and is listening to this, he had a very, very harrowing brush with a brain tumour, and you know, thankfully overcame it. We should be talking about a swan song here, shouldn't we? But this isn't a normal athlete. It's Jared Graves, and someone who was duking out, as I say, with Dan McConnell, an XC World Cup winner the other weekend. I mean, do you think he could bag a couple of stage wins again this year, Riri? What are you sort of expecting to see from Jared?
I mean, firstly, I think it's just brilliant to see him back. What he's been through, and you know, I mean, if there was ever anybody that was gonna beat it was gonna be Jared. Let's be honest. And I think to go through what he's been through and come back, just lining up to me is like, I think that's hugely successful. But knowing him and knowing the kind of person he is, he's not gonna want to come back and just make up the numbers and hang around. Like
this isn't going to be him coming back and having a few beers at the races.
No.
Jared doesn't do things by half.
Will he win some stages? Do you know, I think if the conditions are right, and I think seeing him, you know, seeing the kind of conditioning he's got himself into to race cross country and be right up there, you know, he's probably going to be one of, if not the fittest kind of physically. If the stage is right and it's kind of, you know, a real physical stage and quite dry, then I wouldn't discount him from it, to be honest. But in saying that, he's been out for a few years, and
it's never been tougher, has it? To win a stage.
No, I think personally, I think the speed has increased pretty dramatically in the last few years, and you know, I've not raced since, I've only not raced now 2 years, and if I was to kind of try and wander back in, I'd be going, like, I was watching in finale this year going, I'm sure I never used to go that fast. but yeah, I think the speed's increased dramatically in the time he's had off, and I think it would be difficult to come in and have that raw speed stage after stage after stage, any conditions, any trail. But I do think they're might be stages or there might be races that suit him, and if there's anybody that can do it, it'll be him.
I've got over the course of my career of covering mountain bike races, I've got a little internal folder of names that are people that you never say never with. Do you know what I mean? It's a small list as well. There's only four or five on it, but Jared Graves is pinned right up there at the top. He's just one of the ultimate competitors. So I'm going to go with yeah. I think we'll see a Graves win somewhere this year. And I'd echo your thoughts as well. Like regardless of his performance this season, I think it's just great to have him back after what he's been through. So let's move on now. Great to see Graves back. I've got an option for you now. What do you want, e-bike nibbles or suspension fork nibbles?
Let's go e-bike nibbles.
E-bike nibbles. This is the announcement. We got this on, what day is this going out first? We got this on Tuesday. The Lapierre Overvolt team, which is an EWS e-squad, have been announced. It's looking to be led by another living legend of the sport, another person in that folder of mine, Nico Vulio. The team was announced on Tuesday evening, and it looks set to live in the same sort of pit set up as the Lapierre Zip Collective EWS squad that we saw last time out. It's a natural sort of environment for them to be in. Kevin Mary and Antoine Rogge join the rider names on that squad, along with the GOAT himself, Nico. Now, we've an ongoing bit of banter about nibbles on this podcast, and for anyone joining us for the first time, it's not an entirely unloaded terminology, is it? The kind of little tech trimmings, shavings, changes that bike racers make to their bikes as the quest for speed takes over. Nico Vulio was one of the first riders to take that technical attention to detail to extremes, wasn't he?
Yeah, I wasn't hugely into racing. The peak of Nico's career, you know, in the late 90s and early 2000s. But you know, the more I've learned as I've gotten older, and you look back, and some of the little technology advancements that he was making that other riders weren't, like, he was really ahead of his time, you know, with the whole V process, and you know, bikes off the shelf weren't working for him, so he made his own, and you know, getting
there's loads of stuff, isn't there? There's
suspension, and he just it's pretty cool, and something we see less of these days just because production bikes are so good. But I think, you know, you look at, like, I've got a photo of this Lapierre in front of me, and you're kind of looking at it going, every part of that bike will have been thought out meticulously, and will have it'll be designed to be that way for a reason. It's not like we've left gear cable.
We've got some back ends left over from last year.
It's not like we're going, lash them the on cable there. Routing's not ideal. I'll just stick it in the back of the seat tube. It's like, you know, that the time and effort that's gone into that bike, designing it from Nico himself, it's all got a purpose and all designed around one thing, and that's performance.
Well, in the 90s, sort of the heyday of downhill, there was the famous comparison, wasn't there, that, like, everyone else was sort of spearheaded by Sean Palmer, and the jump onto the sort of X Games bandwagon of action sports, and, you know, downhill being really the sort of becoming the cutting edge of mountain bike technology, and there was this real sort of, like, party atmosphere, and, you know, it was, you know, beers before the race, beers after the race, you know, like, all those sort of lifestyle brands clamoring to get involved with it. And whilst everyone else was in the bar, Nico had a shock dyno set up in the back of his van and was tuning his own shocks. Do you know what I mean? That's the kind of level of attention to detail we're talking about. One of my former colleagues, mountain biking UK, Rob Weaver, went out and to Nico's place for a SRAM wheel launch, and said, like, you know, they did a couple of days riding with Nico, and he's obviously a massive racing fan and had an amazing time and experience doing it. But he said, like, when it came to taking the photos, anytime he went past the cameraman, Nico was down crouched, like, on the floor with his phone, videoing Rob riding past. And Rob asked him at the end of the day, like, did he get any good videos? And he said he was actually videoing the back of the bike to see the deflection of the wheel, to see if it matched up with what he'd modelled in CAD. Like, he taught himself CAD to be able to give better feedback on the wheels. He's just, like, he's an absolute animal. That bike, you just mentioned it, the Overvolt. It's basically the e-bike equivalent of a Lockheed stealth bomber, isn't it? It's just an incredible looking thing.
Yeah, I mean, visually, kind of, you know, very stealthy, kind of all black, kind of gunmetal colourway. You've got Bosch motor in there, and you look at where it's all positioned, like, interestingly the battery is not kind of integrated into the down tube like we see in a lot of bikes, but it's centered right above the bottom bracket, low down in the frame, and you're thinking there's a reason that's there, and there's a reason they've not adopted more of a kind of down tube battery that then puts the weight higher and further forward. I mean, he knows what he's doing.
No, he does, doesn't he? The Lapierre Overvolt GLP2, to give it its full title. You can see all the images of that bike over on EnduroWorldSeries.com. Full SRAM, RockShox package, Axis group set, Michelin tires, Bosch drive unit. As Rory says, battery mounted above the motor, right in the centre of the frame. The lines of it, I think, that compared to maybe 10 years ago when you could pull individual mountain bike brands easily out of a lineup of silhouettes, are definitely ebbing away. But the Overvolt, e-bike Gubbins and all is most definitely a LaPierre, isn't it? It's unmistakably, and to be honest, that is a really recognisable shape because it's the only bike to have won a Pro Men's EWSE so far. First with Yannick Pontal, then the man himself, Nico Vullio. That's your race bike. Right, next up, we have a really good news story. This is the all-new Forbidden Synthesis team, just announced last night. Really positive. I love, as a mountain bike racing geek, I love reading that a bike brand that only came into existence a couple of years ago have identified straight away that they need to go racing, and that's what their product needs to do. On that team, Magnus Manson, Rhys Ferner and Jack Menzies under the team managership of Thomas Doyle. Good lineup, isn't it?
Yeah, great lineup. A real kind of young and exciting squad, all from the west coast of Canada, so you know they're not short of good riding facilities. But yeah, great to see Forbidden form a team. I think there's been a lot of hype around their bike, and you know, quite a unique design. They've really taken the kind of high pivot and Isla pulley design from what the success we've seen in downhill and put it into an enduro bike. So obviously Rhys Ferner last year won the Queen stage in Pietra, I believe. So that was a big result for him, I think. Probably a result he needed as well to kind of have that belief that, oh, actually I can ride as fast as these guys. So I think he'll be only do bigger and better things this year. And then yeah, the two other lads, you know, Magnus Manson, he's you know, an animal on a bike, really kind of big lad, aggressive, does some pretty crazy gaps, etc. And Thomas Doyle,
he's just back from an injury, isn't he?
Yeah,
he had a bad injury at one stage.
I can't remember exactly what it was. Was it like a broken leg, or was it something? I know
you keep talking. You keep talking. I'll check.
I know he was on the Canyon Collective. I think it was last year, alongside Troy and Mark racing downhill. And you know, Magnus is one of these riders that's had some really big standout results in downhill. Like he's had some really good results at Crankworx, and he's definitely not shy of skill or speed. So it'll be interesting to see if he can master the more of the finesse that I think enduro requires, but he's got the skills, so excited to see what he can do.
Yeah, it was a leg and pelvis he did back at the start of last year in May. Horrible crash by the look of things. So yeah, great to see him take to enduro. As you said, Rhys Ferner, undoubtedly one of the stars of the future. Member of Team Canada at the Trophy of Nations. Big ride there. Really put himself in the shop window. He also was very open in Finale last season that he was on the hunt for a new squad for this year. That his time at Kona had come to an end, which I was a wee bit surprised by, because Kona are one of those teams that tend to hang on to riders, and obviously their team manager Matthew DePell, based out in Canada, but they're almost like Team Canada too, aren't they? Forbidden, you know, like in ice hockey, Canada have like two or three teams because they've got such a depth of talent. But looking forward to seeing, and great to see Forbidden at the races. Some really, really nice looking bikes as well. We talked about the Dreadnought before. Jack Menzies, under 21 race. He won that at Crankworx Whistler last time we were there. He's actually relocated from Alberta to Squamish because he feels that that's where you need to be if you want to race enduro in Canada. Squamish, I know that's where Casper Woolley is. That's where Jesse Melamed, Remy Govan, Miranda Miller, ALN's out there. It's definitely producing a name for itself, isn't it, as a venue that's got some of the fastest riding talent in the world.
Yeah, I've never ridden Squamish, but I've got quite a few friends that have relocated there.
It's Canada's inner league.
Yeah, some Scottish expats who've seen the light and moved to the west coast of Canada. But yeah, it seems like it's a really good scene, and like you say, the amount of riders that seem to be either from there or relocating there there's obviously something in the water, shall we say. But yeah, I think it's great. I think, you know, having two teams effectively full of riders from that area shows the depth of talent over there. Not to mention, you know, Casper William. Yeah, he's from that area, and off the top of my head, I'm sure there's a few others as well. So
I think it's only like, you can definitely see the Rocky Mountain. I know there. I mean, if any brand's gonna field an all Canadian team, it's Rocky Mountain. But I think it's really, you can see how that team dynamic still exists and continues to improve outside of the racing. Which, if you're a team in, say, North America or Australia, and you've come to the flyaway races in Europe, sometimes teams are only really getting together for those weeks that they're away and stuff, but that team camaraderie and pushing each other, that definitely seems to exist outside of that bubble, doesn't it? Right, let's move on then to, I promise, suspension nibbles. I've got some incredible suspension nibbles for you. The Juliana Free Agents team has been launched. That's Tanya Neighbour and Rafaela Richter. Contrary to their team name, they are a team, but they're keeping things as chilled out as possible, sort of in the free agent privateer sort of vibe. Richter is one of those riders I think I'm going to tip really to do really well this season. She's a former EWS under 21 champ, but crucially, she has never raced a full season due to finishing school, which she has now done, and we're set to see her tackle her first full season of EWS racing properly. And to put that in context, she is a racer that has at times pushed the likes of Isabel Cordurier very, very hard. I think back to Les Ors in 2019. She's a podium rider already, part-time, and now she's been given a package that would seem to blend the best of the part-time sort of privateer experience with support as well. So I think we could see her do really, really well this year. Do you reckon she'd be on more podiums?
Let's hope so. I think juggling school or juggling university and racing can be quite complicated, and now that she's got the degree in the bag, it's kind of, you know, having that ability to shift your focus 100% to racing will be big. And great support from Juliana. Obviously their bikes are just kind of replicas of the High Tower or the Mega Tower, so we know the equipment's good, and having a teammate on the same program will be good. And I'll trust your judgment, Rick.
I kind of think that if you can take it to the world's best while still, I think it's one of those proper grown up degrees that adults do as well. It's like biomechanics or something like that. Do you know what I mean? Like, she's doing a really, she's involved in a really intensive education process, and she's jumped on her bike at the weekend and taking it to the world's best. You know, I think it's we're going to see potential, and it would be great to see a German rider up there as well, I think, definitely. But you look at that pro women's field, and it's really tantalising for 2021, isn't it? You've got the established big three there, your Isabel Cordurier, Noga Karem, ALN. They came under pressure last year from Morgan Schaar and Jeannier. And now you've got Richter, has got more support than she's ever had. You've got Ella Connolly, who only seems to be getting faster and missed a bit of last season. Katie Winton, who we should mention as well, has moved on to the new Moxie 11 setup she's built around herself on that Nukeproof Giga. We're used to seeing the pro women's field be dominated by, first of all, Cecile Ravenel, then Isabel Cordurier, but it looks like Isabel's going to have a tough time this year.
Yeah, not to mention Melanie Pugin, who was a race winner last year as well. So, Isabel's obviously still the woman to beat, and she's in previous seasons she's done well to keep her nose out front and keep the rest of the girls kind of chasing. But last year we saw three races, three different winners, and you know the a lot of the female riders you mentioned there, you know, on new programs or kind of better setups or more support. Yeah, it's exciting. I mean, you know, I think the thing about racing is, in order to make it exciting, you need that unpredictability. Like, you want races to come down to the final stage. You want them to come down to the wire. You know, you want the underdog to kind of, you know, stick it to the seasoned professional, the kind of winner. And yeah, I'd say looking at it from the outside, I don't think there's probably ever been as deep a talent pool in the women's EWS field, with the sheer number of racers that could win. We'll hit the ground running, but it's going to be exciting.
Yeah, with those double rounds this season, I definitely think fitness is going to be paramount, isn't it? Like, just being race ready every time you get on the bike. This is something that I've always kind of wondered about, in that, you know, armchair pundits like me, bench racers, like fans, we love to talk about, you know, we love to like build up the start of a new season with, you know, like Isabel's going to have it tougher than ever, like the likes of Rafaela Richter signing with this new team and stuff and all that. As a racer, when you're preparing for a season, do you know or care or think about your opposition? Do you, like, will it enter her mind about who she's going to be racing this season? Or do you just solely focus on your own preparation and let the sort of cards land where they do?
I think you've got to focus on yourself, really. I think, you know, for Isabel, I wouldn't say there's one racer in that kind of chasing group who single-handedly kind of poses the biggest threat. I think they've all got strengths in their own right, and I think Isabel will be looking at herself and how she's going to improve, and focusing on a racer. I mean, it's not like, I think the thing about enduro, and it is effectively a time trial. Although you race against people, you're not banging bars at them. It's not like someone's performance affects yours like it would in, you know, like BMX, where you actually bar to bar with people. So really, at the end of the day, as long as you put down the best run you can, if somebody beats you, they've just ridden better. It's not like, you know, it's not like they've affected your performance. That was the way I always looked at it. I think if it was coming down to the season finale, for example, say there was a handful of points between Isabel, who was leading, and say Morgan Schaar, who was second, then you would maybe start to be like, right, you'd base your performance on where they are. If they had like a strong start, then you'd kind of be like, oh, I've got to catch up, like I've got to beat them in the next five stages. But if, for the most part, you're biggest competition is yourself and the course, and if you can, you know, do your best and perform how you want to, then everything kind of has to take care of itself. I think, you know, I'd say the motivation for other riders will be coming outside of races, like when you're doing an interval that you don't want to do and it's 5 minutes and you're halfway into hating life, and then you could just, you know, think about one of your competitors beating you by like a tenth of a second to win a race, and you just you'd suddenly find an extra 50 watts.
I think, right, we've sort of got sidetracked, as is traditional on this podcast, but the suspension on those Julianas, made by a German company called Intend, is some of the coolest looking stuff I think I've seen in a long time. Intense suspension components, they look like, again, this is all on EnduroWorldSeries.com if you want to go and check out the team bikes, but they kind of look like they've been whittled like casually in the coffee break during a space program or something like that. Do you know what I mean? Or like, do you remember those, the Beats by Dre advert, whenever Dr. Dre was up on a satellite, like, soldering together headphones? It kind of looks like they're just so space-age looking. Richter is running their Bandit fork, which is actually an asymmetrically legged upside-down fork. If that makes sense on radio. Air spring, open bath damping cartridge. The theory with the asymmetrical design is to increase the distance between the bushings to keep the fork stiffer. It's got up to 190 mils of travel. They're all handmade in Freiburg in Germany. That, like, you order one, they give you a delivery date and they're handmade, you know, specifically to your needs. Mm. I lost an hour of my evening last night looking at their stuff online. The hover shock is just a thing of beauty as well. You ever ridden an upside down fork? You must have had to go on a Manitou Dorado or something at some stage.
Yeah, I rode Dorados for a couple of years. 2008 and 2009 with Chain Reaction Cycles. Can't say they were my favourite fork ever. They were a bit flexy, if I can say that.
I bet they look great though.
Yeah, they look great, and unfortunately you come to a rock garden and like your front wheel will go one way and your handlebars will go the other, just because there was that much flex between the fork and the wheel. But
that is the problem with the Dorado. This is you tested them on the likes of the UCI World Cup circuit. I put them through my own rigorous testing at the Forest of Dean mini downhill races back in the day. And yeah, I mean, they flexed under me, which I'm guessing was probably a different display of forces than you were exerting into them. But it was always, at the time, the kind of thinking was they couldn't really get a big enough axle in a bike hub to keep them stiff enough. Now, like, I don't know if it's possible for a fork to look stiff, but these Intens definitely look stiff. Have you had a chance to check them out?
Yeah, they're certainly a very industrial looking fork, if I can say that. Like, not in a kind of unrefined way, but you know, just a kind of raw metal colourway, kind of all CNC and yeah, I mean, they look like they're driven towards, 100% performance, and that's it. No decals, like very, very just raw and kind of, yeah, and it's great to see. I'd be with the Bandit fork, the kind of upside down one, I'd be definitely questioning if they come with fork guards, for the picture I'm looking at, the stanchions do look fairly exposed.
I'd wreck them and have to go off for a quiet walk by myself within seconds, I think. But yeah.
But the shock certainly looks interesting. Like if you look at the dampener, or the kind of the stanchion on the dampener, it's very, very narrow in comparison to what you see certainly with other air shocks. And although it might look a little bit kind of out of the ordinary, like obviously the smaller the circumference, the less friction. So, you know, you've got to be assuming that's going to be again built entirely around performance. And yeah, maybe we can sneak a little test ride on them later this year.
Do you think we could get a test on one at some stage? That'd be really cool. Maybe just borrow Rafaela's bike and head off, obviously with her approval. I think it's really interesting because, I mean, we've talked about before, you know, like it kind of feels like we're reaching the ceiling slightly in terms of bike development and the, you know, geometries. It kind of feels like it's, you know, it's, we're into sort of increments of change now, really. And suspension, group sets, tire performance, they're all 10 times better than they were even a handful of years ago. And it kind of feels like we're sort of reaching that upper echelon, but It is still cool to see a brand producing stuff like this that's got so much. I mean, this took me right back to whenever I was a younger bike geek. I was going to say a younger bike geek. And going on to the Nikolai Bikes website and just poring over their stuff. It looks so different, and there is a sort of industrial, dare I say, sort of Germanic, sort of really well-engineered look to their stuff that I'm just really into. Mm-hmm. They've also done a lot of clever stuff with them, like the rear shock. You know, they're standardised. They use the standard size bushings from RockShox and FoxShox. They do a range of fitments, including trunnions and stuff, so you're not having to, you know, invest in a specific frame to fit their things into. And yeah, no, great to see. And hopefully maybe catch up with Rafaela. And to be honest, that looks 100% like something Doddy on GMBN Tech will be getting his paws on in when we get to the races this year. Rory, that's us, I think. Next week, I can guarantee that we will record the podcast for the first time together. That's a big emotional moment, I'm sure, for you. I can tell by looking
at your face. I'll be doing my best for that not to happen, but no. I've got some good plans for next week, don't we? So, that'll be an interesting one, I guess. It'll be trial run, baptism of fire. We'll have to muscle it out.
we might even whisper it, be able to talk about how our new bikes ride in the next podcast, because we've got some video stuff to do. We've got some event stuff to do around EWS Tweed Valley. We've got some partner stuff to do. We've got bike builds, some bits and pieces. So, let's get out on our new bikes and maybe talk about those next week. How's that sound?
Sounds good to me.
Over a miniature Guinness. Right, Rory, thanks very much.
Cheers,
Speak next week.
See you later.